And it was just such a whimper. I can deal with losing, but losing that like that, and specifically to Arsenal, it definitely has taken a bit of the shine off the team.
I think FIFA are in a difficult position in terms of punishment because they've had such a lax attitude to punishment for things that are far more serious crimes than wearing a poppy.
And the culture that he's currently instilled in that side is one where it's okay to lose.
I read something today that said Wolves have scored more goals against the Premier League top six than Man United have.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the podcast that gives real football fans a real voice on the sport that we love. My name is Jordan, your host, and this week on the pod I'm joined by Tasha and Akin. How are we doing, guys?
Good, thank you.
I know why you're we'll get to that in a minute. apart from the how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Well?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm
good, man. Tash?
Yeah, good. Good weekend. Lots of good food. Yeah.
Fun. Lots of good food.
Yeah, man.
As opposed to previous weekends where it's crappy food.
No, but just this week in particular, I just, you know, does ate my mean, body weight in food.
Does that mean you wasn't cooking then?
Oh, you faced it. Started early.
Jeez. Oh, that's just
no need. You ain't worthy of my food.
At some point, she'll come for you, but at least wait for her to come for you first before.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it, man.
Oh, jeez. A quick note, guys. Anyone's listening to the pod that subscribed, we've had a few messages from people that are having trouble downloading the pod on certain weeks where it says unavailable for downloading. All I can suggest to people is to unsubscribe and subscribe again. That sometimes work, or delete the pod and bring it up again. So some people have, maybe it's a phone thing. It might be a phone thing. God, it's an Apple thing. It might.
Yes. I think it's an Apple thing because I had that situation as well.
Yeah, and they make you buy your products and you can't use them.
Yeah,
I think it's an Apple thing, and I can't even remember how I resolved it, to be honest. I think maybe I downloaded it whilst using Wi-Fi,
okay,
as opposed to the mobile data.
I've had it.
Maybe. I can't remember though.
I've had it with a few other podcasts that I listen to every week, and for some reason, one week it just wouldn't play. And I've either deleted it and subscribed again, or just waited like another day, and the next day, for some reason, it plays. So, yeah, so it's not my fault, people. So just bear with us, and hopefully it will sort itself out. Let's get in some drive-bys, guys. I'm going to start with you, Tasha. If you had to pick any of these three forwards, who would you pick? Berahino, Okazaki, Theo Walcott. Theo Walcott.
Okay, so we're using the term forward loosely and not striker. You think you're smart, isn't it?
Attacker then.
Have I got a caveat?
Nope. If you had
okay,
to pick
I'm gonna
those
go,
three,
I'm gonna go Okazaki.
Oh, geez, go on, why?
Because of the three that you've named, they've all had periods in their career where they've not been number one guy or not had good form. And if you look at the three of them, the only one that's come out of them with a bit of credit would be Okazaki.
That's a fair answer. Okay. Akin, the television deal is up for grabs quite soon. And the big six clubs in the Premier League are not happy with how the TV money is being apportioned to each football team in the Prem. Do you think the Premier League, the six big teams, are being greedy in asking for a bigger slice of the pie? And as a result, do you think that may kill the product, the Premier League, that they indeed play in? Or are they within their rights to ask for more money than everybody else?
Okay, I'm just going to clear up the whole TV money thing.
Go on.
A lot of people get it confused.
In 50 seconds.
A lot of people get it confused and think they want a bigger slice of all of the pie. But they actually want 25%, I think, I'm correct, of the overseas TV deal to be apportioned according to where you finish.
Yeah.
So it's not as if they're even fighting for themselves specifically, although of course they are, because more than likely they're going to be
It'll
top
be
six.
Them,
So just to clear that up, I think they are being greedy. Mm. I do think they were within their rights to try and do something, but I just think it's against the whole integrity of the sport. Mm. Part of why people tune into the Premier League isn't for the quality, because the quality is good, but it's not great. Mm. And it's been a lot better. Mm-hmm. But it's for that entertainment, it's for the competitiveness of it. Mm-hmm. And in any weekend, any team, most of the time, you're going to get a couple surprises. I mean, we got one surprise with on the weekend with Palace beating Chelsea, the reigning champions. The bottom side that no goals, no wins, no draws. They beat the champions. Mm. You know, that's the only surprise of the weekend. but you get one of them or so every weekend.
Pretty much every weekend.
Yeah, so if you kind of even make it more unfair with even more money, I just think it kind of ruins the brands that has supported your club, really.
I tend to agree. The counter-argument for most people is that people in Indonesia, people in parts of Africa, they're not paying their subscription to watch Stoke versus West Brom.
They're not.
I think it's a hard one. I think
no, there's no interruptions allowed. But we will discuss. we will discuss it at a later date in another pod.
It's true, Jordan. You are exactly right. The top six teams, especially Manchester United. Let's be
all right. Let's
be real about it. They get the most interest.
They do.
But like I said, I think Manchester United wouldn't be Manchester United without the top league. The top league definitely wouldn't be where it is without Manchester United. So okay. I think they're in a partnership together. Let's respect everybody, man.
Okay. Stick with you, Akin. Do you... got two questions. I'm not sure which one. Okay. Sport and politics is nothing new. It's looking like George Weah is going to be named the Liberian president. I think it's this or next week. He's beating his candidate rival for presidency in Liberia. Are you comfortable with former football players having that bigger say in the country that you may be from or live in?
I'm comfortable with anybody who is smart enough, intelligent enough, well-rounded enough, and the least corrupt of the candidates to be the ruling person or whatever.
So you don't have an issue with...
I don't care what profession they have.
That doesn't make any difference to you.
One of the most powerful countries in the world has got a complete idiot in office at the moment.
And they would say they're worried.
You know, and his background is quite... it is accomplished. He's been quite a successful, I say quite loosely.
He's been bankrupt a couple of times.
Yeah, and he did build off his father's empire. However, he said that he's been quite a successful entrepreneur on his way to office. So, George Weah was super successful in his profession. Why not?
But if you were Liberian, living in Liberia, would you be comfortable that a guy that kicked football, albeit was a very good footballer, will be having... This is not mayor, this is not governor, this is the president of the country, massive influence. And I'm not going down the route of footballers are thick. That's not what I'm trying to get to. No. I'm just trying to challenge in the... Are we comfortable with ex-football players having that much power on basically how our lives and our countries are going to be conducted?
Are men and women.
Yeah.
And different men and women have varying levels of intelligence, political interest, etc., etc. If his policies align with what I believe in, I'm voting for that person, cool. Irrespective
of their background.
Moving on from this, I actually think footballers in this country especially don't do enough politically and for their community. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a movement.
I'm going to stop you right there because we will be talking about sport and politics or football and politics wider. I think it'll be next week we'll be doing that. So,
want to get a flavor they could do thought. More using the platform they have.
Okay. Tasha, Brighton. Have you seen anything from Brighton so far this season to suggest that they're not definitely going down?
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to go down anyway.
They went in your bottom three to go?
No. Okay. I think... clubs like that, your home form is key. I mean, it's cliched and it's cheesy, but it is the truth. And I think they've shown enough. I mean, if they'd have won this weekend, it would have been three on the spin. I think they will need to bring a couple more players in January. They need some more goals. That could be their biggest thing. But I'm more worried for Crystal Palace and West Ham than I am for Brighton, if I'm being honest. I think Chris Hughton knows the Premier League well. I think they've got a nice blend. They've got a bit of maturity. You've got people like Glenn Murray around, and as cheesy as it is, he's gonna make sure no one in that dressing room is taking the mick and negating their responsibilities. I mean, what is it? 19 home games you have and 3 points a game. So that's 57. Is that right? Off the top of my head. If we say you need...
Sounds about right.
Oh, God, the math still works. If you say you need 40 points to stay up, if they get 30 points at home, they only need 10 away. When you break it down like that, that's not that much. And they've already got, 8 at home?
Yeah.
So realistically, they're already, you know, a quarter of the way to being in the Premier League next season. So, yeah, I think they will stay up. I would like to see them stay up. They're a great club and a great family club.
Okay.
And it's a great away day. If you haven't been, go to Brighton.
Cool. All right. Okay, guys, so let's get into the big game of the weekend, or what was supposed to be the big game of the weekend, Liverpool versus Manchester United. And to do that, I'm going to bring in the host of the Anfield Wrap, Neil. Big Liverpool fan. How you doing, sir?
Very good indeed. I hope your listeners are having a lovely time as well.
Well, we're having a great time. Thanks for coming on the pod, dude. Let's get straight into it. I assume you were there on the weekend. As a Liverpool fan, was that a good result for Liverpool and for Klopp?
Yeah, it was a great point. I was concerned before the game that the very situation that happened in the game would happen and Liverpool would react the wrong way. That we'd get to 70 minutes and Liverpool had decided that they absolutely had to win the game, which isn't the case at all. No matter what Liverpool's ambitions are this season, even if they're to come first, to come second, to come third, fourth, whatever, that it was not a game Liverpool needed to win. But it very much was a game we could not afford to lose under any circumstances. But the worst way to have lost it wouldn't have been to be played off the park by a good Man United side, but to have had a smash and grab happen to us. So in not letting that happen, in basically ensuring that the only team that were likely to win the game were Liverpool, which is what we did, then it is a good point. It's not a great point. It's not, you know, we should always be trying to get all 3 points at home. But we were the only side who were going to get 3 points from the game. And that had been a decision that was quite clearly the case about 55 minutes. Mm. I wasn't worried. And that's a really interesting thing. I was really worried. I would be worried before the game. I'd be thinking, oh no, they're going to hurt us. And by about 55 minutes, I decided there was nothing Man United could do that could hurt us. The only way they were going to score was a 35-yard thunderbolt.
You looked a little bit blunt without Sadio Mane up front. Would you agree? Mm.
Yeah, we are a little bit blunt without Sadio Mane up front, but I think that's all right. In that, lots of sides are blunt without one or two very good players. It's a thing that happens, and you've just got to take your chances when they come to you. The frustration of the game is that, you know, both Matip and Chan should score. Both of them should score. They're both bad misses, and I don't care if Matip is a centre-back. He should still be able to kick that ball into the net. I don't even care that it's a really good save. It is a really good save, but the keeper shouldn't be given the opportunity to save it. And Chan doesn't even hit the target. Chan should score, and he certainly should be hitting the target, but he should also score. They're really good opportunities, but also we had lots of opportunities to create opportunities, and that's why, for instance, I don't think United, you know, the idea that it was some sort of perfectly executed plan for Manchester United, I just don't buy. I think that Mourinho gets to say what he wants post-match, but when he actually looks at the tape, he'll be thinking to himself, good Lord, we've got away with one there on a couple of occasions. And I'm fine with that. You know, we've got to be grown-ups about football. We're going to play 38 times this season. Some teams are going to come to Anfield and get away with one. We're going to go to some places this season and get away with one. It's a thing that happens. I shrug my shoulders and move on and say, you know what, we did enough to win. We didn't quite pull it out the bag. But it gives us something to build on. And had we not won, as I say, the emotional reaction from Liverpool supporters, from the team, from the manager, would have been something that could really undermine our October. As it is now, we can kick on.
Watching the game, Neil, I thought it was very, very similar to the Chelsea-Arsenal game, the 0-0 about a month ago, in which I thought it was relatively close, but I think Arsenal probably just shaded the game. If there was going to be a winner, I thought it was going to be Arsenal. The game on Saturday lunchtime, similarly, I thought if there was going to be a winner, I thought it probably would have been Liverpool. But I don't think United were on the ropes in terms of, you know, they had to weather a storm. I can't remember, correct me if I'm wrong, that many Liverpool chances in the 90 minutes. And I emphasise that because you're the home team. I mean, there was the two chances you mentioned there. But apart from those two chances, I don't remember United at any point thinking there's definitely a goal coming here. We're on the ropes.
I mean, there was chances to make chances. So what I mean by that is I can't believe how much the ball we had in their penalty area. So there's a point on about 60 minutes where Firmino has got the ball. He's on the byline between the six-yard box and the edge of the penalty area. And he hangs it up back post for Salah. And it's not that complicated a ball. He should just be able to hang it up for Salah to head nod it into an empty net. Mm. And he just overhits it ever so slightly. Now, that doesn't go down as a chance because I don't think Salah actually ever makes contact to it. But as far as I'm concerned, that's a chance to create a 9 out of 10 chance. That's a chance to create a great chance. And Liverpool had a fair few of them. And I think that's something which we need to work on. There's been a lot of talk about Liverpool in front of goal. And I think a lot of it is sort of semi-justified criticism. But something that we've not been good at this season is creating 9 out of 10 chances. creating the chances that, you know, you really, really, really should be scoring. Mm. So we've been having a lot of efforts on goal, but what we haven't been doing is just being patient and keeping it in the box and keeping it in the box and keeping it in the box. And we were doing a little bit more of that, but it's something that I think, again, we can really improve on. But also the execution. I just think when you say before you thought Liverpool shaded it, I think we more than shaded it in that. I just simply think that we were the only team who were going to win the game. As I say, normally, if it's 0-0 on 60 and I'm watching a game of football, I'm thinking, oh no, there's a sting in the tail for this for us. I wasn't here. And it seems to me really strange that Manchester United come to Anfield and look far less likely to score than Burnley. And that was the case. You know, if it's 0-0 against Burnley on 60, I'm thinking there's a sting in the tail here for us. But I really wasn't thinking that against United. And even on 85 minutes, when, you know, you'd still think, good Lord, isn't it tense? I wasn't that tense. I was thinking, we're either going to score here or it's going to be 0-0. They're the two possible outcomes. And then it ends up being 0-0. You shrug your shoulders, as I say, and you just pick yourselves up and you think, right, we've got a tough game next weekend against Spurs, but one where I really do fancy us because I think that we're better than them at what we all do. And then we go from there and move along.
Just a couple of quick final ones, Neil. You've now played United and City. It's looking like it's going to be those two at the moment for the title. Having played both those teams, and I accept that the Mane red card in the City game slightly skews what your answer might be, but do you think that Pep's approach to the season, we're going to get into this with the guys later on, do you think that Pep's approach to the season and games will see him win the title? Or do you think that Jose going to places like Anfield, and although he stank the place out, he got a point at Anfield that ultimately over 38 games will win them the title?
I don't think United will finish first or second. So The premise of the question is fundamentally flawed as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Who do you think will finish second?
I don't think. I think that Spurs are better than United. I think that Liverpool are better than United. I think that there's every chance that that may not quite be demonstrated over 38 games. But the table does, I think, occasionally lie a little bit. But I think that, listen, if this league's won with 85 points, there's every chance Man United find a route to 85 points and do the business. But then there's every chance that Spurs do.
I've got to let Akin come in there because he couldn't believe what he just said. That Akin, what do you want to say to Neil?
I agree with a lot of what you've said. To be honest, you were the more likely to win. I accept that. It doesn't appear that we went there with the intention of going for the win. Mourinho went there to stink the place out. I don't think you should find that strange.
No, not at all.
You know, Mourinho's been the same type of manager for over a decade and we know all about him. I find it telling that maybe it was a Freudian slip, but you said had Liverpool not won, it would have been uproar so-and-so. You didn't win. But I get why you feel that way. The level of club Liverpool are, you are delighted and happy with a point at home against a team that you say, and I can't believe you've said this, are better than Manchester United. There's no way you're better than United this year. I think that's
what I'd say on that is that last year I was furious we didn't beat Manchester United because of the league situation where we were flying and United weren't and they were struggling. This season, when we've improved, I think United have improved as well. Given the league situation, but also our general situation, the general sort of thing that surrounds Liverpool, then it was important not to lose the game. I'm quite relaxed about that in that just as last season, United needs to create a bridgehead and then move from there. That's one of the things that happens. But this point last season, United went and got a point at Anfield and then they went 6 months unbeaten. I think there's every chance this Liverpool side's got it in them to go on a long unbeaten run. But when they do, they will win more games than that Manchester United side last season managed to. The reason why is they're quite literally better at playing attacking football.
You're comparing Liverpool this season to United last season.
I'm comparing us to United this season as well. Our attacking shape's far better than United's. United's attacking shape is based upon getting 1-0 up and then waiting for the game to be extended and then going and scoring some goals. It's worked so far, but there's a big question about what happens if you don't get 1-0 up. And I think that United are in for a rough few weeks here, conceivably. And they've also got another shock to the system, which is that Lukaku does not do the work up top that you need to do when you're playing against the top six home and away.
Just finally, moving on to the weekend now, Neil. Big game against Tottenham. do you think that the Wembley factor that everyone talks about will work in your favour? Or do you think that having won their first Premier League game on the weekend, albeit they struggled to their 1-0 win, that they, you know, that monkey now is off their back and you're going to be in for a difficult game, bearing in mind they've got Harry Kane and you've got Lovren and those kind of guys in at centre-back?
Well, last season he played us twice and we had the same guys at centre-back, and Kane scored one goal and Spurs only scored one goal against us, I think I'm right in saying. In fact, he might not even have scored that one goal against us last season.
Okay.
I'm very relaxed about Liverpool playing Tottenham. The reason why is because I think we're better at their football than they are. I think we've demonstrated that over the last two campaigns, where I think we've been much the better side when we faced them. And so it's very much a game, I'll be dead honest, I expect you'll be talking about this next week and you'll be saying, if you're not saying Liverpool have won the game, you'll almost certainly be saying Liverpool were the better side. And I expect us to, I do actually think that there's every chance we get 3 points. For me, this one's a toss-up. They're all toss-ups, and I think that this is what's important. Before, I don't quite agree with the coronation of Manchester City yet either. There's still a long, long way to go in this. And I think we're all determined to try to act as though any side at this stage is far more likely than any other side to be able to go on and put a proper run together. I think City are the most likely, but I don't think there's absolute distances between these sides. When we went to the Etihad, for instance, before Mane got sent off, that was a 50-50 game. And everyone knows it was a 50-50 game. So I think that the core thing here is Liverpool can go anywhere and fancy they can get a result. It's crystal clear from last season's results against the top six. I'm pretty relaxed about going to Wembley. I'm pretty relaxed about playing Tottenham. I'm pretty relaxed about Harry Kane. There's every chance he can score two goals against us. But if Liverpool can just find a way to get the shooting boots on, I'm quite relaxed that we can begin to turn these chances and the way in which we go about the business, we can begin to turn that into some results. We need to quite soon. We don't want the season to get away from us. It does happen sometimes. I've seen it happen to Liverpool sides before. But there's every single chance that we go to Spurs. And as I say, there's nothing that Liverpool should be scared of.
Neil, just finally, where can Liverpool fans and indeed wider football fans check out the Anfield Wrap?
TheAnfieldWrap.com. And if they want to get all the shows, they can go to TheAnfieldWrap.com/subscribe. But TheAnfieldWrap.com does two shows, which are free on a weekly basis if people want to check out what we do. And then they can go from there.
Brilliant. We're going to get some Tottenham fans on the pod next week, so I'm sure they'll be wanting to respond to your prediction, your claim ahead of the game this weekend. So
let's be clear about this. Spurs got 86 points last season and deserved to, and they finished really, really strongly.
Yeah, yeah.
But ask them about that game last season at White Hart Lane. Liverpool with a better side. Pochettino would have shook hands on 80 minutes, and they came to Anfield and we decimated them in 25 minutes. We were better then, and we were better the season before against them as well. They've got to improve if they want to go toe-to-toe against Liverpool.
It's a massive game. Neil, thanks for coming on the FFP, man. I appreciate your time, bruv.
Take it easy.
Cheers, mate. Take care. So that was Neil from the Anfield Wrap there, coming hard and coming strong. Akin, let me get your views on, first of all, the game. 0-0, not the greatest game. I wasn't even going to really spend any time on this game, purely because it just, there wasn't really much from it. But there were some points that you made over the weekend that I thought were, and I've heard some other counterpoints over the weekend that I would develop in a minute. But just generally of the game, as a United fan, what did you make of the game?
Well, it still leaves a bitter taste in my mouth, even until today, Monday. I used to be like this as a child. If United didn't win, got a bad result, I couldn't watch Match of the Day. I couldn't stand football. Until
sulking,
yeah,
yeah.
As you grow older, you just get past it. But this, what the Anfield ones, they hurt.
They still burn.
And to me, the result felt like a defeat. And more importantly, our approach and our performance, you know, how we set up, felt like a 5-0 defeat. It really hurts. We went there and gave them respects like they're a big club, and I don't even say we. It's Mourinho. The Portuguese Pulis. And it's true though, we're Manchester United, and I'm not saying Sir Alex Ferguson didn't go to Liverpool with, firstly, the first thing you need to do is
don't lose it,
keep them quiet, silence the crowd, stay tight for the first 20 minutes or so, silence the crowd. Once the crowd is silenced, then you can work your way into the game. But his plan was to work our way into the game, keep tight, but still fashion some chances. Maybe with 15, 20 minutes to go, if it's still level or 0-0 or whatever, let's go. Let's try and nick something here. Without being crazy, but try and nick something here. Mourinho, he was there only to stink out the place. And last season, I gave my criticisms about him, but at the same time, I still defended him in that I think Joshua said this was his intention. This is what he plans to do. Mm. And I would say, surely he can't. And I just kind of kept that kind of mentality. Surely a manager, a so-called, well, he's a top manager, a super manager, as they say, at the biggest, arguably the biggest club in the world, cannot go to certain places as if he's managing West Brom. But he does. And it's something, as a United fan and all us United fans, I think we have to get used to it whilst he's here. When it comes to certain big games, especially away from home, he is going to set up in a way just to stop the opposition.
That's a sign of how bad things got post Fergie, that your fans are okay with that.
Our fans aren't okay. The fans I know,
but you will tolerate it.
I'm not tolerating it. Look how annoyed I am.
But, okay. but you just said that you said you have to tolerate it.
No, whilst he's manager, I have to.
So you're accepting it
I'm not accepting it because I'm not happy about it. I don't think it's acceptable.
You said you were happy about it.
I'm not asking you to put on a rah-rah skirt and dance around with pom-poms. Whilst he's manager, that's what he is going to do. If you ask me if I can get rid of him at the end of this season, I would. I'll bring in Pochettino. I've said this.
Okay, I've not heard you say that. So
Jordan knows. So it's not that I'm accepting it. I just know that whilst he's manager, that's his way. Now, in the comparison, you know, we're top two at the moment, United and City. Mourinho and Guardiola have been counterparts at a certain level.
Well, hang on, we're going to come to the whole Manchester City element and what Pep's doing in a moment. I just want to just get Tasha's, what as a neutral, what was your view on the game?
I think it was United's win, in all honesty. I think, like Akin said, Fergie, everyone knows, it doesn't matter what team you are. If you go to Anfield and you can get the crowd quiet, you know, or you can get them a bit apprehensive, that's like, you know, a little 10% in your corner.
But sorry to cut you, I will let you finish. But this idea that Liverpool have some kind of extra special, I know their fans are seen as a 12th man and all that. But
I'm not calling them the 12th man.
Doesn't that idea apply to most football clubs? Go to St James's Park.
The reason why I'm saying fans,
not all,
go
yeah,
to Old Trafford.
Some, it's a derby some, for United. Some, but not all. There's certain grounds you will go to, and the fans have more of an effect than they do in other grounds. And Anfield is one of those where if you hear that, if it's silent, even watching on TV, if I'm watching a game on TV and I can't hear the Liverpool fans, I'm getting nervous for Liverpool.
It's even more so for the games against United because it's a derby.
So they're even more up for it.
They are more raucous. They're more on it. When they're silent against us, their players are getting tense as well.
Okay.
And something has happened. So it's not that they're special because they're not. And they are even less than what they were 20, 30, 40 years ago now. But
So let me...
It was, as I was going to say, I felt like, as I did when I put the bet on as well that morning, that United could go there and win. I feel like Liverpool's defence makes me nervous for them. And I feel like...
You made them look like brazy.
And I just felt like, not even necessarily Lukaku, but I definitely felt like Rashford and Martial, with their pace and their kind of youthful attitude that they have, when you see them and they have that freedom, if they were going at Liverpool's defence... They could have got that. If we're saying that Mourinho is still going to want the one goal, they could have got that one goal. They could have sat back and took the 3 points.
But let me ask you, because I think that you fell for the same trap that I did. I go into that game, thought to myself, I thought it'd be a draw, but half of me was thinking, I think Jose might just let them go, you know. He might let them
go.
I don't mean
let them go, but I mean play the players take advantage.
But he did last year at Anfield.
But take advantage of Liverpool's weaknesses, which is their defence.
Mm.
And
he's just too pragmatic.
But then that means, that then means for those attacking players, so say Rashford on one side, Martial on the other, that then means for them to play 30 yards further up the pitch where they can hurt Liverpool's poor defence.
Yeah, but you only need to do that. You only need to do that for 40 minutes and get the goal, and then everyone can sit back and do what they need to do for the next 50 minutes.
That's not happened before with Jose. Well, so I'm saying, yeah. I was like you, but after I was thinking to myself, why did I think that? Jose was never going to make Rashford hurt Liverpool's defence.
But I just feel like... Man U have the better defence, so therefore they should take the most risk. That's me being a neutral. That's the way I see it.
But even before the game, Jordan said, "Yeah, played them all three: Lukaku, Martial, and Rashford." I said, I don't mind having a trick up our sleeve, but I never saw, I don't see Mourinho doing it.
Pre-match, did you ever think to yourself, we've got a good attack, they've got a poor defence, I think Jose might just rip them up, you know? You never at any point in pre-match, you knew that what Jose was going to do.
I was going to go at them, but I thought, like,
it's Jose.
I thought last season, I thought the same thing pre-match last season, that in the final 20 minutes or whatever, yeah, let's go. Let's go and nick this goal and then, you know, sit back and protect it. And I thought the same this season, even more so this season, given that we are going for the title, given that I think the margins are going to be so tight this season, I thought he would, go for it. Not go for it, but final 20 minutes.
Because you can't afford to drop points the way City are playing.
Well, that brings us to our next point now that, you know, has Pep Guardiola now, Tasha, redefined what is, and I'm stealing this question because I thought it was a very good question I heard on the weekend, is he now redefining now what is a good point at a big ground? Because the way Pep's going on right now, he's acting like, I'm looking to beat everybody home and away. Do you know what I mean? So what was seen as before to this weekend, a point at Anfield is a good point. I don't care how you play, good or bad. A point, we can laugh at Liverpool and they're in poor form, but a point at Anfield is a good point. But what Pep's doing, is it a good point anymore? Or do you think over the course of the season, Pep's attitude of trying to beat everybody and Mourinho being pragmatic might see Jose more successful in the long run?
I don't think it will, because I think more and more with every season, we're getting closer to the point where that goal difference is becoming so crucial. And the goals City, the amount of...
It's an extra point, isn't it?
The amount of goals, exactly. The amount of goals City score compared to Man U's 1-0, 2-0, 3-0 wins, if it's coming down tight to the wire. No, because we're seeing it more and more where goals are important. 4-0,
4-0, 4-0. Let's not forget that, guys.
Okay.
Come on, be fair.
Okay, but he would...
We've been smashing in goals as well. They've just done it to a next level.
I'm averaging it. Yeah.
Come on, you said 1-0.
You've had like how many games... I'm not just talking this season. I'm talking as time goes on.
Forget last season. I've forgotten it. Please forget it.
So, do you think that a point at Anfield, if you're Jose Mourinho, is still a good point? Or do you think, as Akin, I think, may say...
It's only a good point if it wins you the title. If it doesn't win you the title, then it's not a good... It's a good point at that moment in time. But come May, is that a good point? When we'll see.
Yeah. Please don't misinterpret what I'm saying fully. Go on. If we went there with the approach to win and got a point, I could live with that. Because it is at Anfield. It's a decent / good point, you know. I want all three. And the way I am, let's go and deal with them.
But trying to win it, what if you'd have lost it? Because we've seen Tottenham and Arsenal go to Arsenal.
But I genuinely don't think going to win it that he would have lost it. I think going to win it, he may have drawn. I genuinely think that.
I don't think Liverpool are
individuals overall.
I think they have a good counter at times. I think their defence is woeful. We managed to make their defence look great, and that was because of our
approach. Whichever keeper's in goal,
their goalkeepers are terrible. They have only one way of playing. You know, it can be not easily stopped, but it can be stopped. But at the same time, you've got to do something in attack as well. You can't just keep...
So let me ask you, United fan.
Can I answer the Guardiola question? I don't think he's redefining anything. I've seen them start well with him. I've seen them start well without him, with Pellegrini.
You don't think this season's different?
No. I think they look good. They looked great last season.
This is
going
to be one of those things where you have to cut and hold for future.
I could be wrong. So what? Big deal. I saw this last season.
They didn't look this good.
There's difference.
They won their first 10 games in all competitions.
There's winning, and then there's winning.
They were winning. Anyway, look. Agree to disagree. I just think they are penetrable. They can be penetrated, Man City. I don't think they're as great as everybody is going on. I think the longer their goes on, the more it will play in their opponents' minds, and the more it might manifest, if that makes sense.
But it doesn't matter if they're penetrable, because if they can see two goals, they're going to score 10.
No, I don't agree with that.
If you look at them, no other team in the league has as many players that scores them goals.
Do you think they can maintain this for the whole season?
Yeah, because I think that's where a lot of teams fall down. You have teams that have maybe... This is where when Liverpool lost Mane last season, they lost one of their key goal scorers, and you saw that it wasn't shared throughout the team. With City,
I'll take
your point though. If they lose Aguero, which they did, they're going to score
Aguero,
seven goals.
You lose Sane, it's fine. They've got six, seven players in their starting 11 that are that can score goals on a regular basis. And that's where the difference is for me, which is why
I've just been watching football for too long to say they're going to maintain this level.
I'm slightly with you. Let me ask you.
Also, sorry, difference thing's overplayed as well. Only one time has the Premier League been decided by a goal difference. One time.
When was that?
Ha ha ha.
No, seriously, I can't remember. I'm old. As I told you, my memory is
so Akin, let me ask you. You're pissed because you drew the game and you didn't like his approach.
The approach was the main
okay point. Right, so let me ask you. If he went with your approach and he kind of put it on Liverpool,
fully put it on them. I'm saying keep it tight, but have an attacking outlet. We had one person.
So if he did that and lost the game 2-0, would you be more pissed than you are now?
I'll be pissed. But
would you be more pissed?
I don't know. I don't think so. I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
Because I ain't going out like...
Because he went for it.
Let's be honest. If Fellaini was fit,
come on,
he would have played. That's
yeah, but is Fellaini a game changer?
You know what? What really...
I'm not knocking him, but I'm saying when Fellaini's on the team sheet, you know where Jose...
This is aimed at others, yeah.
Fellaini's not a game changer.
This annoyance that I've... Fellaini got injured. People say, oh no, it's a miss. Learned football people saying it's a miss that Marouane Fellaini is injured. Like, really? Because he's done okay against whatever team we played last or whatever. And Marouane Fellaini, come on. That's ridiculous. He has, fair enough, I've learnt... To not hate him.
I don't hate him anymore.
I can say his name now.
Yeah, I don't despise him.
But you know, he's never a miss if he's injured because his replacement should be ahead of him anyway.
Like, his replacement should be ahead of him. Wow.
I don't even care.
All right. We're going to talk. City. The City game was the big one of the weekend. We're not going to dwell again because we're short on time. But we are going to talk about City next week on the pod in more depth and what they're doing and looking at, in particular, Jesus, because he's looking like a big problem. So we'll get to Man City on the pod next week. Right. I'm going to move on now to a new section, guys. We're going to start a new feature on the pod called Remember Him. And this week, the player... I don't know why I did that. That was a bit too excited.
Enthusiastic.
It was a little bit. I'm looking forward to... Yeah, that was Mad East London, isn't it? I don't know where I came from. I'm quite pleased with myself with that one. The first player we're going to every week or most weeks pick out a player from the 90s Premier League that maybe has been forgotten about. And this week on the pod... We're going to start with the former Tottenham and Crystal Palace striker, Chris Armstrong. Natasha, remember him?
I didn't. And then when I thought I did, I've got him confused with someone else.
You got the wrong player. So you didn't remember him, clearly.
No, I didn't remember him. I knew he played for Tottenham. I knew it was the era. I don't remember if you put the 90s in the message. But no, I can picture his face now. But I remember it was the Holston kit, wasn't it?
It was. And okay. the HP. Hewlett Packard kit as well, yeah.
Boy, computers were heavy
in
them days.
You got sold in that kit though, didn't it?
I think he did, yeah. I don't remember any other kits.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it.
So what do you remember about him, Akin?
I remembered him as soon as you said him. I think I was more into football back then than I am now.
So players like him got the focus.
I'd watch every game and every single match of the day and I was on it. But he was a decent striker. I think put him in the Premier League today, he might get a bit more goals.
He'll
be in the England squad.
You've jumped to my final and he didn't get no caps.
No way.
My final question was going to be, which you've just totally leapfrogged and gone to, is because I remember him being a striker that was, he wasn't prolific.
No, he wasn't.
But he was your kind of 10 to 12 to Premier League.
See, with Shane Long, basically.
No, he's better than Shane Long.
He scored more than Shane Long. But he scored more than Shane Long.
He was better, man. But Shane Long, like scoring goals is not his game.
Are you part of the Shane Long fan club as well, Jordan?
I don't know about a fan club, but he does a job. Anyway, but I was thinking, someone like Chris Armstrong in today's Premier League, what level would he play at? And would he be a top team as their third striker?
Do top teams even have third strikers anymore?
Well, Chelsea barely got three strikers than top strikers.
I think he would be mid-table to top six.
Okay.
He's English. So there
would Burnley.
Be...
He's a Burnley player, isn't he?
He's better than Burnley.
Oh,
he's better than Burnley.
Burnley like eighth or ninth or something?
No, but they're not going to... I don't see them finishing there.
No, but I'm saying he's English, so Sean Dyche should love him.
He would, actually. because he worked
quite
hard.
He's a grafter.
Yeah, he worked quite hard and he was getting
he ran the channels, he was a bit of a poacher. Yeah.
He had pace though, so I'm thinking
get a little bit of,
I'm thinking he might have been shunted to the wing.
Yeah.
Like a wide forward. You know, so but he wasn't a top player.
No, he wasn't.
But I think in today's game he might get 15 league goals a season, which is deemed a lot these days.
So what would be his equivalent now? Because I was thinking then he wasn't the top 10 the Prem, but he's probably just outside the top 10. So you had,
is he a Troy Deeney?
No, ooh, he's better than, I think he's better than Troy Deeney.
I don't know, you know,
I think he's
don't knock Troy Deeney, you know, because he'll hunt you down. You're ready for war.
Yeah. Let him come.
I think he's probably just better than Troy Deeney, but I think he's in that bracket. It's a good
he's
shout.
He's better than Troy Deeney. I think you Troy Deeney's like a bottom half of the table striker, and I think
you think he's mid-table.
Yeah, mid to top six.
He can get Everton. He can get on the bench at Everton.
He can start for Everton.
Or have no locker in the under-23s changing room.
Oh, jeez. No suit.
Jeez.
No suit.
No respect.
Doesn't make sense.
I love Niasse. See?
Yeah, you do, but Koeman doesn't.
Koeman doesn't like anyone right now.
I saw a photo of him as well, Chris Armstrong, and he's got a
recent one.
Yeah, he's got like long dreads and really thick. He's really changed his look completely.
Or just grew his hair.
Or just grew his it's true. He retired in 05, which I thought he...
When after Spurs, he might have dropped a division. I think, did he go Birmingham or somewhere?
I think he went to Burnley when they were in the lower division.
I'll picture him in the blue kit. Don't know why.
Yeah, he dropped down. But Chris Armstrong. Okay, let's move on now, guys, to our first topic of the pod this week. Start with you, Tasha, on this one. I'm interested to know if you think that the loss of momentum / not getting key minutes on the pitch over a sustained period of time, i.e. 2, 3, 4 years, can ultimately kill a player's career? Or if you think that you can go to a club, maybe it was a bad move, didn't get played for a while, and still resurrect your career to maybe fulfill the potential you were showing 2, 3 years earlier?
I don't know if kill is the word I would use, but it could definitely hamper and set back. I think, we're talking about football, but if you look at any career where you're creating something called producing an action, it's if you don't use it, you lose it. Like I did shorthand 7, 8 years ago. If I was to do a shorthand test today, I probably wouldn't pass it because I don't use it. So if a footballer's not out there training, doing the simple things that he needs to do to be successful, then when he does get those opportunities, it probably is going to be harder. That said, it depends on the footballer and the environment. You know, some footballers are going to play until they're 45. I mean, generally society are living older and being stronger for longer, so we're eventually going to see someone who's 45 running around the Premier League. Probably be Gareth Barry, to be honest. But
probably will as well.
Probably, I really hope not.
Just killing Ryan Giggs records one by one.
Scared, you know.
But yeah, I think, you know, if you're the sort of person where you need that playing time confidence, and a great example would be Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I've always said for him, he needs to play. If he's not playing, he looks awful for those first two starting games he has, and then he gets back into his stride. So if you're not playing for a period of 6 months, a year, I mean, if we just talk about Arsenal, Aaron Ramsey, Jack Wilshere, as players that we saw come back after long periods out injured, it took them time to get into their stride. And that was at a club where they were loved. So imagine if you're somewhere where no one likes you, no one's singing your name, and no one's your friend, and you go out on that pitch and you're already not feeling your best, then it's going to be even harder to get back to that average of 60-70%.
Akin, I've just got a list of players. I made a list of players over the weekend that I think fit the description of the question that I'm asking.
Berahino should be top.
I've got Fonte, Berahino, Sturridge, Delf, Bonny, Lamella and Wiltshire. Combination of injuries as well in there, some of those players as well. But all of those players, I'll start with Fonte. He was, I think, seen as one of the best centre-backs in the league. Definitely top 10, top 15 in the Premier League at Southampton. The last 6 months, Southampton weren't going well for him, so I think it was clear that he wasn't going to sign a new contract and stay. Left for free, he's gone to West Ham. He looks shocking at the moment. Did that 6 months perhaps have an impact on how he's doing now? Because he lost a bit of momentum and now he's really struggling.
I think, of course, it would. I agree with everything Tasha has said in that if you don't play for a sustained period of time, it's going to affect you. The longer you don't play, the longer it will take for most people. Some people can. I can't think of me.
I couldn't think of anyone that's been out of the game for 18 months or on the bench for a couple of seasons and then come back.
But Delph hasn't looked bad.
I think the system's helped him.
I think Fonte is a weird, an interesting example, because I don't think it's just his injury. I think it's the fact that he thought he was going somewhere in his head, and that's not the reality. He was talking like West Ham was some big top six club fighting for Champions League. And then you wake up from that dream and you're injured. That's a lot to deal with.
Again, another thing, I just looked at Jose Font's age and he's 33, and I think age has a lot to do with this. If you're young, I think losing out on a lot of football can more or less kill your career. Between the ages of 18 to anything up to like 23, obviously give or take a year or so, you need to be playing like men's football. I know I don't even like saying that because it sounds like such a, you know, but
I think I know what you mean.
But you do need to be playing as 20 games a season, 30 in all competitions, to kind of get that development going. You could have as much potential as, I don't know, the best players in the world. If you're not playing in those years, you will never find that level, in my opinion. At the end of your career, if you miss out on a long period of time, your body's changing, it slows down and everything. You need to be kind of pushing your body to the limit in order for it to stay sharp. If the moment you take a 6 month to a year gap from doing that, you might not come back from it. Jose Font might not come back to the level, and the level he was reaching at Southampton, I don't think it was extraordinary.
He wasn't a worldie, but I think your club were linked to him at one point for a little bit.
when that Dutch guy was there, we were linked to him.
Louis Van Gaal.
I don't know what you just said. It just feels like a swear word, so screw you.
Don't do it again.
At the end of the career, maybe he's just gone over the cliff and he might not get that back. Someone like Berahino, I think he's a prime example of the first example I gave of a young player.
Hang on, we're going to come to Berahino in a second, but just on your two definitions, do Jack Wilshere and Wayne Rooney fit those definitions? So your first one was, if you don't get key games between the ages of 18 and 23, it's hard to make up those key years. And then you also went to talk about, you get to a certain age, latterly 27 upwards, if you're not playing regularly, you lose that form. So, Wayne Rooney.
So yeah, I think those are good examples. Wilshere's missed his boat for me.
Do you think he's done? In the sense of his potential will never be reached.
Yeah, he's not going to reach his potential that he could have reached.
But that doesn't mean that he might not be intelligent enough to adapt his original potential was. Like, you hear people like Giggs talk about, Skulls, as you get older, you do different things.
Yeah, of course.
So he may have missed the potential that he had at 22, but that's nothing to say that he can't be the player that he...
No, I don't think he's going to reach the level he could have reached. Doesn't mean he's not going to have a career in the top
But
level,
I think he's had an easier ride division. Than a lot of players, because he's loved at Arsenal.
I think he's had an easier ride too. He's at a club. English guy, and whether we want to admit it or not, that gains you favour.
But he's at a club where he's loved, and everyone wants him to do well.
He was brought up there through the academy. You know, he's had an easy ride, in my opinion, too. Because from what I hear about his lifestyle, they could have gone for him. But they haven't. They've just said it was injuries, and they've been kind, and so on and so forth. So, but I think he could have reached one of the best players in Europe, in my opinion. And that's gone now.
You think he's missed that
boat
now?
For me, maybe he's a mid-table player. At best, because he missed those crucial years. Wayne Rooney, on the other hand, he's the other side of it. He had enough games at that time. He could have reached more potential, but that's his own lifestyle issues and his dedication to football, the lack of it. But then he's at the end of it, that if he missed a sustained period of time, he's already done anyway. But if he missed a sustained period, bloody hell.
Because I think Ferguson was on record saying more than once that Wayne Rooney is the sort of player that, unlike other players, when they come back from injury, you have to kind of really be gentle and coax them back into match day fitness over a course of 2, 3, 4, 5 games. He was saying that Wayne's got the kind of body, you've got to throw him in. He needs to be playing as much as possible.
You saw every time he came back from pre-season, man was carrying extra pounds. It took... I remember the amount of times I've had this row with Man United fans. I'm like, look at Rooney. Do not tell me. He's a Ricky Hatton type athlete.
Yeah.
I ain't training. Yeah. I ain't got to get up every day and go and see my physio. I'm having a party. He's like the rest of us at Christmas. We're hibernating. And then you go back to work and it takes him 2-3 months and he's not hitting his stride till November.
That's why Ferguson had to play him every week, because the best way to get fitness
to play him.
Is through games.
That's the only way you're losing them pounds.
Yeah, and that's the only way Wayne Rooney would have got into match shape. So that was why. And that was in his peak.
That was when he was, it was. Ake mentioned Berahino there. He was the main reason this topic came to my mind, because I really rated Berahino. I really thought he could have been England's next top number nine. He was really the guy. And then I'm just worried that 2 years at West Brom, the last 2 years, has finished him. He's missing penalties. All right, people can miss penalties, but he doesn't look
sharp.
Don't
start this conversation again.
He looks overweight as well. He was a small guy before, but now he looks like he's, I don't know.
I mean,
Michael Owen got a bad injury, I think, just before he went to Newcastle, when he left Real Madrid, I think it was. Or was it United?
Real Madrid to Newcastle.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And he came back, I remember looking at him, he came back really wide and hench, and he was never a big guy, Michael Owen. And I just thought, are you trying too hard to get back to your fitness and trying to get back what you had 4 or 5 years ago? And it seems Berahino is the same for me. His body shape looks different. Is it just me?
Or does he just developed, though?
Yeah, I was going to say. Maybe. I think there's a few points for Berahino when I look at him. And like you, there was a period of time and I thought, yeah, if this guy keeps doing what he's doing, he could be we're now seeing Harry Kane be.
He needed love.
But I think he's a really great example of why mental health, not just in football, but in society, is so crucial. If you're in a working environment where you're effectively, what's the word, where you're just like cut aside? You're basically in Coventry. Yeah. there's excluded, a one word for it. But you're basically out on the outskirts, you know, and if you don't have that mental strength to keep yourself going through, so you're not playing, you're losing form, your manager and the owner don't want you. They've said they don't want you. You don't want to be there and you don't have that mental strength in yourself and that belief in yourself to keep going. Even when you do get that opportunity again, like Mark Hughes is Mark Hughes, but is he the guy to put an arm around Berahino? I don't know.
But my question would be, is it even about a manager, or has Berahino missed the boat?
So no matter a manager could help. So someone like Roy Hodgson would be great for Berahino right now. He needs a hug. He needs a cuddle. He needs to come and sit down and eat a piece of cake and a cup of tea. He needs that love. Mark Hughes is probably too similar to Tony Pulis.
I don't know, you know. I think I get a different vibe about Mark Hughes. I think he he's a tough guy, but at the same time,
I'm being a former striker as well. Yeah, you think he might?
I think Mark Hughes would give him the love.
He needs to give him the carrot, you know, rather than the stick.
Yeah,
basically.
And also he signed him.
Yeah.
So
I would like to see him get back to that. But I do think if your head's someone like Wilshere, it's probably easier for him because in his head he can believe the hype. Because around him everything is like, despite
you're
what
great,
the press
you're
say,
amazing, you'll be back, you're great. Yeah.
Despite what everyone else is saying, he thinks, I'm the boy. You know, some players are like that. Rooney felt like he was the boy.
Whereas when Berahino goes into work, it's just...
He doesn't...
I say though, and then everyone walks past him.
he looks like he doesn't feel like he deserves to be there.
I don't even know if it's a matter of mental strength, because that's kind of... Not suggesting that he's not mentally strong.
No. I think mental health... If you're being knocked down for long enough, I don't care who you are,
exactly,
you're going to have a moment where you doubt yourself. Yeah. And if you have that moment and it grows from a seed, then it's going to become worse. And 2 years out of the game, whatever
especially
you do, if you're a chef and you ain't cooking for 2 years, you ain't going to feel like you can go and run a Michelin star kitchen.
Especially when you're a young person.
Yeah.
We always forget, these footballers, even in their late 20s, they are young people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very easy as the public for us to kind of knock them down and say, oh, you should be doing this, that, blah, blah, blah. They are young people.
Yeah.
And again, I agree with what Tasha said. It's easier to doubt yourself when you don't fully know yourself.
Yeah.
Because in your early 20s, and he was what, 21, 22 when
he
was
21.
He doesn't fully know himself the same way a 30-year-old would know themselves, the same way a 40-year-old. Do you understand what I'm saying? I actually think his situation is sad. I think he was bullied.
It's a cautionary tale, isn't it?
I think he was bullied, though, and I don't know what much he... I don't know the details of it, but I don't know. I think he just didn't fit in.
I think there was a combination of that, and I think poor management. To be fair to West Brom
and poor advice.
Well, there's that, but he made some bad decisions as well. So he's not the complete victim here. But just moving it forward in terms of, you mentioned the word cautionary here. I'm thinking of a couple of players that maybe are in the Premier League now, but could we be asking this question about them in 18 months' time? Ross Barkley and Virgil van Dijk. Now, he was out, Virgil van Dijk, for 8 months of last season, or most of last season. Then you had the whole summer where there's no football being kicked. He's just got back into the Southampton team. And I watched him on the weekend and last week as well. And he didn't look good. Now, that could be him sulking because he didn't get his move. But he didn't look good. Could he be one of those players that in 2 years' time we're saying, Virgil van Dijk, remember when Liverpool were going to pay 70 million for him? Oh, look at him now. He's a... bloody, I don't know, he's at Everton or he's at West Ham.
It can be a lot different for your defenders and then it is for midfielders and forwards. Do you know what? I actually don't think Barkley's going to be that player, because I know he got a lot of grief for turning down the move to Chelsea, but I think that's the most sensible thing he's done in the past 12 months. Because if you're not sure that's the right move for you and you're injured,
stay put.
Why are you taking yourself? And it's not just a move. You're moving from Merseyside to London. You've got all that to consider. And I think, despite all the stupidness that goes on in the press when people comment and say he wants to leave and whatever, that was the most sensible thing. That showed me that he does know his own mind, and it is about him being sure, and he wants the best move for himself. A lot of players make moves.
I heard that Conte got the call that evening. I know you heard the thing as well.
I didn't hear nothing.
Conte got the call, transfer deadline day, that Barkley was coming to London to do a medical to sign, but Conte's phone was off. So Chelsea were trying to phone him to tell him. Chelsea were trying to phone Conte to tell him, look,
it was going to be done today. What they should be doing again.
Yeah, and Conte's phone was off. So I'm reading into that Conte couldn't give the seal of approval to the signing.
But that's the same thing though. Because Barkley, from what I heard, Barkley tried to phone Conte to find out his plans for him. And Conte's phone was off.
And then he thought,
if you're not... Your phone is off.
Okay, yeah, I take
either
your point.
Either way,
yeah.
He's made the decision based on the information he has at hand.
Is right,
yeah, okay, that, yeah.
You
know, yeah.
You're not serious about me.
Yeah.
Let me stay where I am.
Too many young players move because, I mean, we see enough young players. They go for big money. I mean, Scott Sinclair, prime example, City. All them youngsters that used to go to Chelsea back in the day. Yeah, we're going to Chelsea. Not thinking, hold on a minute, where am I going to play?
Well, Sinclair's a good example, actually, because how long was he at City? Was it just a year or was it 2 years?
No, he was... I think it was two or three.
Maybe a year or two.
And, okay, he's in Scotland, but he's maybe an example of someone that has, to some degree, learned his lesson. Yeah. No, you're not.
But then now... Player of the year. But you know what it is as well? He's a father now. That changes people, I think, you know. When he went to City as a young star, now he's got different... He's thinking, boy, I can't be sitting on the bench. You know, you consider your career in a more mature situation when you have a child at home or and a partner, I would think, and you ain't just worrying about yourself, you're worrying about the mortgage and the home for your family.
Go on. With that, it kind of leads into digressing a tiny bit, but I think a young player making that move isn't always... I think if I was in that situation, I would back myself and I'll say, I'm going to break into the City squad, I'm going to break into the Chelsea squad or whatever. Barkley's one I wouldn't have gone. I think he did the right thing. But Scott Sinclair, Fabian Delph, who before? That rubbish guy,
Jack Rodwell.
Adam Johnson.
We don't need to mention his name, do we?
Oh, yeah.
I want to squeeze in a couple more players. What do we think about Bonny? Is Bonny done? Did that 2 years at City kill Bonny's career? Banging in goals at Swansea. It didn't work out for him at City. He's struggling again back at Swansea. Is he another example of
players? He'll tell you it's all about confidence for a striker. It's as simple as that, isn't it?
Has he lost it?
If you're not playing, if you're playing and you're getting chances and you're missing them, you're still 50% of the way there if you ain't even getting chances.
A final one, Sturridge. Will Sturridge ever repeat what we saw 3 years ago in that Suarez season?
No, because he'll never play in a team like that again. No, he won't play. He won't have two other players around him that enable him to work to his strengths and also cover up his weaknesses.
Do you think he can play for a top six team and score the goals that...
I'm conflicted because I love Studge. I would love to see him do well.
I think this time is...
But I think he made the wrong decision previously. And I felt like...
Chelsea or...
God, I'm trying to think which of his moves. No, leaving Chelsea, going... to City? Or was it the other way around?
To Liverpool.
Yeah. I think to Liverpool.
He started at City.
No.
But the Chelsea move was he had to leave Chelsea because at the time he was been playing left wing, and they were playing.
Yeah,
Torres,
it would have been going to Chelsea then.
Going
to Chelsea was not the right move.
In terms of will he ever get there? I don't think he'll get the chance. I think he's been whiteboarded in English football. And I don't think he'll get the chance to show what he can do, whether he could or not. I'm not sure.
I think I might have touched on this on season one of the pod, and I'm going to ask it again. Is it ever okay to start with the ambition of start the season with the ambition of just wanting to stay up / starting a game with the intention of just not wanting to lose? So this kind of feeds back into the possible Jose Man United thing on the weekend. Do you think it's ever acceptable for any club to start the season thinking our ambition is just to stay up?
I think in these increasingly precarious times, yes, it yeah, I'm looking for voiceover jobs. I think it probably is. I mean, if you go into a game and you say, we want to keep a clean sheet, no one complains about that. And it's the equivalent of what keeping a clean sheet, the equivalent of what not losing, the equivalent of what just staying up results in. It means that it's the difference between, especially with the amount of money the clubs have now, it's the next division, it's people losing their jobs, it's redundancies, it's people taking pay cuts. I think it's how you bring that across. I'm never a fan of hearing we just want to finish 17th. I don't like how it sounds. But if I hear our objective is to stay in this division, I think there's a contrast.
It's the same thing though. What they're really saying is
the same thing.
We'll take 17th right now.
But the way you say it says we're no better than 17th. If you say we just want to finish 17th, you're saying we're no better than 17th. Okay, so we'll take that. Whereas if you say we want to stay in this division, your players are like, yeah, we want to stay in this division. Yeah, yeah. We want to be, you know, maybe 15th, you know, because there's a lot of money and a big difference between those two. But if you say we're just happy to stay 17th, as you see with a lot of clubs, you spend half the season just floating between 14th and 19th and up and down. Mm. And like we're talking about players' mental health before and intelligence, not everyone's intelligent enough that you can just keep it as straight-laced as straight as that and then look to achieve more. They will hear 17th as 17th and they won't aspire to anything greater. And I think, yeah, I think it's how you kind of say it and suggest it, and also who it's said by. If West Ham say that, there's a mutiny in Stratford. But if Brighton or Huddersfield say that, I'm a bit more sympathetic. This is their first Premier League season. The fact they're even here is an achievement in itself. So 17th is still an achievement for them.
Akin, we've got managers like Ranieri said it, Pulis pretty much every year. They're big fans of the whole 40-point mantra, 40-point.
Does Pulis say it? Does he say we want to? He says we want to hit the 40-point. I don't recall him saying we want to finish 17th.
No.
In the past, though,
I've definitely heard him say
when he was at Stoke in the beginning.
I've definitely heard him say 40 points.
Yeah, I've heard him say the 40 points.
I can't.
Well, either way, do you think that this is sensible management, or do you think it goes against the spirit of what sport is supposed to be about?
I think you have to be realistic. If you've just come into the Premier League, say for example Newcastle, they've just been promoted. They're objective should be to stay up.
There'd be a mutiny.
They need to grow. Who cares? I don't care what you fans say.
I tend to agree with you, but Rafa can't come out and say our aim is to finish 17th.
I'm not saying they should say it, that finish 17th.
But that should be the mentality from the manager.
The objective is to stay in the Premier League. At the earliest stage, let's try and get to around 40 points and let's build from there. That's what I think, and that's realistic. And that should be the objective for two seasons. If you want to build organically and sensibly, you have to kind of be sensible with it. You know, the Leicester thing, it's not, 100 years? It might happen every 100 years. Mm. So it's not something that can be looked at as a blueprint. Or even, I remember Ipswich Town, maybe in the year 2000, 99-2000 season or something, or 2000-2001, they came up and then finished fifth in their first season. Mm. I remember it because it's so rare. Yeah. These things don't happen often. So the most intelligent thing to do would be our objective is to stay up and then go from there. I don't think it's against the spirit of the game. I think being against
or sport, competition.
Isn't the spirit of sport to do the best that you can do?
But psychologically, if you're telling your players,
if I'm in a
100-meter
race with Usain Bolt, I'm thinking, boy, the best I can do is second. Because I'm being realistic, so that's the best I can
do.
But
on that point, isn't sport and
you'd still run your fastest though?
Yeah, of course I would.
But psychologically, if you've told yourself or your players that the objective is to stay in the league, don't you psychologically you don't do your best by default? You don't.
But that's what I'm saying. It depends who says it and who it's being said to. Because we saw with West Brom, they get to 40 points and it doesn't work. Whereas Stoke, they would get to 40 points and they would want more. But West Brom, it seems like they got to 40 points. They were like, okay, we'll take 41 or maybe 42. Mm. They weren't playing like they were prior to
that. But isn't competition about trying to win? Everybody can't win. And we all know that West Brom won't win the Premier League next year. But at least at the start of the season, you should be having the mentality of, guys, this is our objective, to go the whole season undefeated. We know it ain't going to happen. See, but that should be the mentality, surely.
Okay.
That's sport.
This is two separate things. When you're looking at a season objective, you know along the way you're going to get beaten. Mm. That's probably going to happen. I don't know any club that's gone a whole season without losing a game. I've come across a team that's gone a whole league season without losing a game, but not a whole season.
Okay, but we're talking league though.
Okay, let's talk about Premier League. You're going to get beaten.
Yeah.
Only one team drew their...
You just can't say it.
Being serious. Looking at the objective of a season, you know you're going to get beaten.
Yeah.
The most important thing is how you respond, blah, blah, blah. But as you approach each individual match, trying to win or at least draw, depending on the size of your club, whatever.
But hang on, that bit of doubt alone means that you're not giving a... If you're thinking we might draw there, you've not given 100%.
Okay, you're at 80%. Taking something from the game. And taking something from the game, if you're a Crystal... If I was going to say Crystal Palace, but they beat Chelsea this weekend, so that killed that argument. But if you're a lower team, taking something from the game for you is a clean sheet and a point against one of the
top 75 minutes, I agree. But at the start of the game, if you're going into the game or into the season already with that mentality of this is about damage limitation.
Yeah, but it's not about damage limitation. It's
a
different
thing. Losing 3-0 as opposed to 5-0.
Exactly.
That's damage limitation. Trying to get a result from the game, which in your eyes could be a point, isn't, for me, a terrible thing for if you're a smaller club or you've just come into the Premier League. Like I said, each individual game you should be trying to win or at least employing a tactic that will give you the best chance to win.
Let's not lose.
But then, some even don't. I will try and win, but I can understand the kind of, let's try and get a point here.
Bournemouth, great example.
I don't accept it for some clubs.
It's taken Bournemouth a while. It's taken Bournemouth a while, but I watched them at Wembley against Spurs on Saturday. They finally realised you can't be going ham every game, like you can win every game. And for the first half, Spurs didn't. They were confused. Bournemouth was structured. They were strong, and they had the better chances. Now, there's nothing wrong with a team like Bournemouth going to Tottenham, who are one of the top four teams in the league, and setting themselves up, playing one up front, having 10 men behind the ball, because they might have come out of there with a point. It's better they come out of there with a point than no points at all.
But I take your point, Tasha, but those are surely tactics and thought processes that happen during the game. It's 0-0 after an hour. Right, we'll take a point.
No,
I get that.
Maybe the manager's not saying it.
I'm talking about the mentality from the outset.
Maybe the manager's not saying it, but when he's putting his two defensive midfielders in the middle of the park and only one striker, he don't need to say it. We know exactly what he's doing.
What does that say to the players and the fans?
Nothing, because Bournemouth...
It says
like
we're here
win.
To basically not lose this
no,
game.
No, because Bournemouth had the better chances. If it wasn't for Loris, Bournemouth would have been 1-0 up at half-time.
And not only that, Jordan... I'm going to flip this on its head. If it's an a two-leg tie...
That's different. I know you're going to say
no,
that.
No, it's a two-leg tie, you won the first leg, you only need a draw to go through in the second leg.
That's different, though.
No, hear me out. Would that be acceptable to go through that draw?
Yes.
Okay. The Premier League is made up of an aggregate of 38 games. A point... in one game can add to the aggregate amount of points that you get throughout the whole season to achieve the objective you set out at the beginning of the season.
Okay, I accept that. But what if your mentality in every game is to try and win the game?
But
look at other sports. Boxing, for example. You don't think to yourself in boxing, okay, I'm going to go into this fight, but my objective is to just... is to try and win on points. Boxers go in the ring to try and knock people out.
But you're in the fight.
Isn't that dangerous then?
No, boxers go...
to try and win on points.
A lot of boxers, yes. A lot of, not many boxers... Actually, let me not say not many, but a huge amount of boxers don't have the punching power to knock out people a lot of the times. Boxing isn't a sport about knocking out their opponent. It's a sport about outboxing the opponent. And that is, first of all, to show that they're winning on points. And then if they open the opportunity for the knockout, that's when they go
for it. What's the best way to ensure victory?
Of course the best way is to go for that knockout. But whilst you go for that knockout, you go for a big right,
you left yourself open.
And they can give you a left hook and you're gone. So that's the whole, the same thing.
But that comes down to skill.
One of the greatest boxers of our generation, Floyd Mayweather, he used to approach fights to win on points. And he won a lot of his big fights on points. So, you know, and he's seen as one of the greatest boxers of our generation and left his career undefeated. So,
okay, I accept that. I'm just looking at teams in the past in the Prem, like Swansea, who when they, from the get-go, their mentality clearly wasn't let's stay in the league. From their first season, they were never about staying in the league. They played good football.
Well,
I don't know what was said, but their lineup suggested they weren't looking to get draws.
They were here for a good time, no long time.
They weren't looking to get draws. So I'm just making the point that, and as in the Premier League, as a Premier product, do they not owe it to their customers and their fans to offer a Premier product and try and win the game?
You know what? Like I said, each individual match, you go in it to try and find a way to win.
Mm.
Yeah, depending on what team you're playing, depending on the tactics you employ or whatever. But when you're approaching the season, I think there's nothing wrong if you've just come up from the Division 1 to Championship.
Old school, you know. Rumble's Cup and everything, yeah?
Yeah, if you just come up, there's nothing wrong for the first season or two, or maybe even three, trying to establish yourself and just having the objective of staying in the Premier League. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Personally, I would like to try and find a way to win every game, but I understand managers who... say in this game, let's try and stop the opposition from scoring. Let's try and.
What kind of manager would you be then? You've just come up with Brighton. Would you be the kind of manager? You just said that personally, you would be the kind of guy that goes to win it. But if you were the Brighton manager,
crazy though.
No. But trying to beat Man City at home doesn't mean you're crazy. It just means you're trying to win a football game.
No. I'm not. There's a way to try and beat them, though, isn't there?
But my point is, there are managers here that don't even try and win it.
I wouldn't go gung-ho to try and beat
Man City. No, that's crazy. I'm saying rule out crazy. But I'm saying there are certain managers that don't even try to win. They clearly, their objective is to just not lose this game.
Okay,
and I'm asking, in the spirit of sport, which is about competition, about winning, from the outset, surely your intention should be to try and win the game. And then you change it accordingly as the game goes on.
The type of manager I'd be, at the moment I see an opportunity for someone to go and play 4-4-2. to play with two real strikers,
yeah,
and play from the front, shall we say, and exploit the poor defences that are in the Premier League, and also defenders, their inability to be able to deal with more than one striker now. I don't think centre backs know what to do anymore if there are two strikers. I think they'll go crazy. So I think you might have to bypass the midfield or play 5-3-2 or maybe
I must admit I probably would be in Ian Holloway with Blackpool and say this may be our 1 year.
They're on my list as well,
although with brains and better hair.
It's in a balance, isn't it?
But I probably would be of the mentality like
you would have gone for it.
I would, yeah, this might be our only year here. I want to give these people the best 38 games they've ever seen in their life.
If you were the Stoke manager on the weekend against Manchester City, would you have gone there thinking with the team talk, the mentality, we're here to win this football game? Or would you have gone there thinking, right, they're on fire, we're Stoke, let's just try and keep it tight and get out of here with a draw?
I think a good manager knows the truth but doesn't always share the truth with his staff or his employees. So I think Mark Hughes probably knew they weren't going to beat City, but he would have told his players, let's go out there, let's get at them, let's see what we can get. And I think that's a good management thing. I think it's, you know, he probably knew... realistically that if they came out of there only conceded 4 goals, it was probably going to be a good day, the way City have been playing. But you can't tell your players that, and he clearly didn't, because his players still kept going. I think if he'd gone in there and said to his players, let's get a draw, as an established team like Stoke, the sort of players they have, that would have been worse for them. They would have got absolutely pillaged, because they did still have opportunities despite the fact that City had a great game.
And this is what I was going to say. I can't really... There's the balance to be had, but at the same time, they're all men on the pitch, 11v11. Yeah, they're playing great stuff at the moment, but they're still men.
Yeah,
you know, I would try,
City get a player sent off, and it's a whole different game.
Even with versus 11, I would still be there trying to do them something. If you get screwed, you get screwed.
As we saw when Stoke played United,
there's a balance to be had, and you do have to set up in a way to give yourself the best chance to be able to take a chance when you do get it, or try and exploit their weakness.
But then also not leave yourself open for. De Bruyne's passes. I mean, you could have had 10 men there, and he still looks like he would have got his pass through.
And I think people will kind of also point to the Watford City game. They lost 6-0, where Silva, I watched that game, Silva tried to win that game, and Watford actually played quite well.
Yeah.
In fact, they played very well, but people will look at, but you got smashed 6-0. But no, I like the fact that he went and said, we're going to try and beat City today.
We know they're the sort of people that say Mesut Ozil doesn't work on the pitch. They're the sort of people that say certain things about certain players. You know, they're certain fans. If you actually look past the score, which most people should do, then it's a completely different game.
And also, it's only one game. You lost, you didn't get the 3 points.
It's true. Today. Getting beat 6-0 against City isn't going to keep you up at night as a Watford player.
You can lose 5-0 and still win the league. My club have done that.
If they lose 6-0 to Crystal Palace or Brighton, that's a bigger problem for him. But losing 6-0 to City, he can say, well, do you know what? We could have closed this down here. We could have done that. But here's the positives.
Okay. Tash Akin, thank you very much for coming on the pod this week. Do not forget to subscribe to the Football Fans Podcast on iTunes. We are also now on Spotify, and we're on Instagram and Facebook too. Tell your friends. We're on Twitter, FFP_11. Until next week, peace.